In a recent column, NPR Ombudsman Alicia Shepard asks, where are the women? Shepard monitored NPR's flagship shows, Morning Edition, All Things Considered, Weekend Edition, and Weekend All Things Considered, to determine how often NPR uses women as commentators or sources in its stories. She acknowledged that her study wasn't scientifically perfect, but the results were so lopsided she was sure she was onto something. For example, she found that only 26% of the sources in NPR stories were women, and NPR is by no means alone. Many media outlets have tried and failed to integrate more women and minorities as sources and commentators, nor has On the Media covered itself in glory on that score. So why is that? Reason one, laziness. We have our Rolodex of reliable sources, and why fix a system that ain't broke? Reason two, failure to realize that a system that breeds such complacency is broke. And reason three, fewer females in the pundit pool. One person who's paid a lot of attention to that last issue is NYU professor Clay Shirky. He wrote a blog post earlier this year called A Rant About Women. Clay, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So, first of all, let's both acknowledge the irony in inviting you, a man on the show, to talk about why women are underrepresented in the media.
Duly acknowledged. There was recently a panel at a conference on what can men do to get more women in tech, and the panel was entirely male. And the irony of that was lost evidently on the conference organizers, but not on the audience.
We decided to go with you because earlier this year you did this very public thing. It got a lot of attention. Why did you write your rant?
I wrote the rant, and I wrote it as a rant, not as a thoughtful, well-considered article, but just as a rant because I felt like I had to blow my stack about what I was seeing happen with my students when they entered the workforce. Within the interactive telecommunications program where I teach, you would not walk into that environment and think, oh my goodness, the men are so much more talented than the women. But when those students get out to the world, I see a sorting out that happens along gender lines. And I think at least part of it is that women are not being aggressive enough about saying, I can do that. My work is good. I'm applying for that grant. I'm asking for this recommendation. I'm raising my hand. I'm taking a risk in public.
And you cite a great example. One of your students, a woman, once wrote to a reporter promoting her own work, and she got an interesting response. Can you tell that story?
Yeah. This is the smartest student I've ever had at the Interactive Telecommunications Program. And she hid her light under a bushel when she was a student there. She went on to do graduate work at Columbia. She hid her light under a bushel there. And then one day she said, you know what? I'm done with that. I'm going to start to tell people how good this work is, because she started seeing mediocre male colleagues getting more recognition for their work than she was getting for her own work. And so a reporter was going around asking about game design and game theory. And Jessica, my student, said, my work is awesome. You should write about me. And the reporter wrote back and said, I've taken a look at it. Your work is indeed awesome. I will indeed write about you. But I also have to tell you, you are the only woman to put yourself forward. Women put each other forward. Men put women forward. Men put themselves forward. Women never put themselves forward. So
you write, not enough women have what it takes to behave like arrogant, self-aggrandizing jerks.
Right. I said it then. I believe it now. I think the concern for how other people think about you is one of the sources of essentially work paralysis among women. One of the big skills that you need, and my institution does not do a good job of inculcating this in women. There are not enough institutions that do. One of the big skills is to be able to do what you want to do without caring what other people think.
You have to acknowledge the fact that when women put themselves out there, they're called biatches. The word shrill is applied to them. They are not called leaders. They are not called strong.
That is right.
They're called strident hags. And it's a pain in the butt.
The single biggest mistake I made in that rant was not to acknowledge that fact. It's true. I knew it was true when I wrote it. I didn't say it, and it was dumb. The reason I think women should get better at behaving like arrogant, self-aggrandizing jerks when the situation calls for it isn't that it will work as well as it works for men, because women are indeed more punished for putting themselves forward than men are. The reason I think that women should do that more is that they will get more of the kind of success they imagine for themselves than if they don't do it, even given the unfairness of the discrimination they face itself.
You write, women aren't just bad at behaving like arrogant, self-aggrandizing jerks. They are bad at behaving like self-promoting narcissists, antisocial obsessives, or pompous blowhards, even a little bit, even temporarily, when it would be in their best interests to do so. Whatever bad things you can say about those behaviors, you can't say they are underrepresented among people who have changed the world. What was the reaction to that?
The number of people have said, oh, thank you for this. I think this is exactly right. A number of people have said, you should never write on this subject in public again because you were so obviously and voluminously wrong. I'll tell you, though, the reaction that has surprised me most is that any number of people, many of them women, have come forward and said essentially, women have a different way of getting along in the world. We're more social. We're more nurturing and so forth. And I have two problems with that attitude. The first is essentially that if you flowered up the language a little bit, you could dump that into a Victorian almanac. And the second is that all of that kind of nurturing social junk imagines that the best role we can imagine for women in the workplace is as kind of middle management mommies, right? They don't get to found the company. They don't get to run the company. Maybe someday they can be senior vice president of marketing. But mostly they're there in this kind of middle layer of management to keep things running.
So what was your reaction to the findings of the NPR ombudsman? Have you got any guesses based on your experience as a media consultant and in academia as to why this is the case at NPR and so many other news outlets?
I think the list you went through at the beginning, all of the various reasons that you just sort of go for the slots, is exactly right. I think the only thing I might add to the list is that the dialectical model of radio, where you get two strongly opposing voices, favors people who put themselves forward and say, I will express a point of view with absolute clarity, even if it turns out to be wrong, because that makes good radio.
Certainty. It's a wonderful thing, even if it's entirely unjustified.
Right. Male answer syndrome. One of the great ways to find out whether or not you're completely wrong is to behave as if you're completely right.
In your view, what is the impact of having so many more male voices as experts and sources than women?
I think one of the big impacts is that the male voice is what expertise comes to sound like. And so even from someone who doesn't go in with a formally sexist bias about whether men are more expert than women in general, you may just unconsciously flip through to those parts of the Rolodex. Someone somewhere has to say, we have to change the fact of the representation before we change people's mental model of what expertise sounds like. Because if we just wait, we will always lag the cultural change rather than leading it.
Clay, thank you so much.
Thank you, Brooke. Thanks for having me.
Clay Shirky is a professor at New York University and author of Here Comes Everybody, The Power of Organizing Without Organizations.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.